tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ann Ball reporting. It now looks like Congress will not meet the midnight deadline to avoid a government shutdown, and the Office of Management and Budget reportedly is preparing for a short-term partial government shutdown. Frustrations grew as GOP Senator Rand Paul held up voting. He opposes the measure because it increases the federal deficit.
But really, who's to blame? Both parties. We have a 700-page bill that no one has read that was printed at midnight. No one will read this bill. Nothing will be reformed. The waste will continue, and government will keep taking your money irresponsibly and adding to a $20 trillion debt.
Voting looks likely to occur early Friday morning. And the approval in the Senate seems assured, but the situation in the House remains more uncertain. The United Nations has granted approval for a high-level North Korean delegation to travel to South Korea for the Olympics, granting an exception on sanctions against the repressive regime. The exception directly affects Cho Hui, a senior leader in the North Korean Workers' Party who has been on the UN sanctions blacklist since June 2, 2017, and is subject to a travel ban and asset freeze. South Korea's UN mission told the Security Council Committee the 22-member delegation was expected to attend the opening ceremonies Friday and stay until Sunday. The delegation includes the sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, who was blacklisted by the U.S. Treasury Department. This is VOA News. U.S.-backed Kurdish fighters have captured two fugitive British IS Islamic State converts, part of a group of four terrorists known for torturing and beheading Westerners, U.S. officials say. The officials identified the two as Alexander Koti and El-Shafi El-Sheikh. Koti, quote, likely engaged in the group's executions and exceptionally cruel torture methods, including electric shock and waterboarding, the State Department has said. The men were wanted as part of a group of four Islamic State terrorists dubbed the Beatles because of their British accents. Vice President Mike Pence is in Japan Thursday and will act, quote, with vigilance and resolve in the face of North Korea's nuclear and ballistic missile threats. Doug Bernard explains.
Pence spoke to some of the 54,000 personnel at Yokota Air Base in western Tokyo after touring the facility and being briefed on the capabilities of the base if, quote, diplomacy fails. The vice president has said he will make sure North Korea's atrocities are not forgotten as Pyongyang attempts to offer up an image of cooperation by participating in the Olympic Games. Pence also highlighted his earlier announcement that the U.S. would continue to intensify what he called a, quote, maximum pressure campaign and keep it in place until North Korea abandons its nuclear and ballistic missile programs. Doug Bernard, VOA News.
South Sudan has officially declared an end to the country's cholera epidemic. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Aid agencies say enhanced surveillance alerted them to affected areas where rapid response teams were deployed to investigate and ferret out new cases. They say efforts made to provide clean water, promote good hygiene practices, and treat cholera patients were instrumental in containing the disease. A series of national vaccination campaigns last year was also critical in ending the outbreak. Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, provided more than 2.2 million doses of oral cholera vaccine. Aid agencies say cholera could reappear as early as April when the rainy season begins. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The stocks plunged again Thursday on the U.S. Stock Exchange. They were down more than 1,000 points. It closed at 1,032. I'm Ann Ball in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon vows to hold senatorial elections despite uprising in the country's English-speaking regions.
The election will take place in the two parts of our nation. And if you want to be the eyewitness, let me send you an invitation. You will be part of the process to testify that the election taking place in a free, fair, inclusive manner.
Issa Chiruma Bakari is Cameroon's Minister of Information, but the separatists say no election or any government-sponsored event will be allowed to take place in English-speaking Cameroon. Kenyan activists demand more diversity in President Uhuru Kenyatta's cabinet picks. And South Sudan takes steps to deal with rising inflation rates.
We have issued banks with a circular that regulate the large cash transactions. When people come with large cash, banks need to make sure that the sources of these funds are legitimate sources.
Dayo Tong Ngog is the deputy governor of the Central Bank of South Sudan. And the East African community embarks on implementing a transportation master plan. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Paul Biya of Cameroon has announced that senatorial election will be held on March 25th this year and in all parts of the country. The announcement is the beginning of four major polls to be conducted by the Elections Commission, including the presidential election. Voter registration began in January. The upcoming senatorial election comes as the country faces uprising in its English-speaking regions, as well as insecurity caused by the Boko Haram insurgency. But Information Minister Issa Chiruma Bakari tells viewers Peter Clotty that the senatorial election will be conducted in a peaceful atmosphere.
If anything foreseeable today or in the future will jeopardize or prevent the election from taking place, the head of state wouldn't have summoned Cameroonians to be part of this competition. Cameroon is doing well, and the election will take place without any trouble.
People have expressed concern that due to what is going on in some part of the English-speaking areas, it will be difficult for elections to be held. What do you say to that?
The election will take place in the two parts of our nation, I mean the northwest and the southwest. And if you want to be the eyewitness, let me send you an invitation. You will be part of the process to testify that the election taking place in a free, fair, inclusive manner.
Does ELECAM, the Elections Cameroon, have all what it takes? Has the government given them the budget that ELECAM will need to administer this election that you said will be free, fair, transparent, and credible?
ELECAM were not ready. The election wouldn't have been summoned. People were not would not have been convened to take part in this election. ELECAM has to play a fundamental, a pivotal role during this election. And before convening people to be part of this process, this is a clear indication that ELECAM is ready. All the pieces of the puzzle are already put in place and let the election take place.
Mr. Chiruma, when the president made the announcement, there were mixed reactions. Some people tell me from Cameroon that the 80% of the country said they were ready for the elections. The other 20 critics are saying it's not conducive to organize senatorial elections right now. How are people taking it from the people that you've interacted with?
Well, this is democracy. This is their own opinion. It is impossible to check and to say which part is right and which one is wrong. Only the election will decide. We are going to scrutinize, we are going to monitor the way that the elections take place in those two areas, and, well, we will make up the mind.
How is the current situation in the country that you said enabled the president to call for senatorial elections on March 25th?
As far as the security is concerned, we just have in place just what is necessary to protect the freedom of movement of our brothers and sisters in the two region. If something would jeopardize, endanger the election, the head of state wouldn't have summoned the election. Rest assured that this is not only my conviction, this is the conviction of the majority of Cameroonians. Now, if we have some of our brothers and sisters here and there who are skeptical, well, okay, let us see. Let us see. That will take place.
Mr. Chiroma, can the government guarantee the safety of prospective Cameroonian voters who will go to the polls to vote in this election? Because there are concerns. There could be voter apathy that could set in that will prevent them from going to vote.
Well, as far as this opinion is concerned, the government is very well aware of what is taking place in those two regions of our nation. All may, as you can say in English, no stone will be left unturned in the process of protecting, removing whatever is good, whatever is necessary to hold a very free, fair election. Don't be concerned. Listen to what I am telling you. If something foreseeable, predictable, could take place and prevent the election from taking place, the head of state wouldn't have convinced people to be part of this.
Issa Chiroma Bakary is Cameroon's Minister of Information. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Yaoundé. A spokesman for the self-proclaimed Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Southern Cameroon says no election or any government-sponsored event would be allowed to take place in English-speaking Cameroon. This comes as the Cameroonian government has announced that senatorial elections scheduled for March 25th this year will take place in all parts of the country. The Ambazonia Secessionist Movement is seeking independence from French-speaking Cameroon because of what it said is marginalization. Chris Anu, Secretary of State for Communication of the Separatist Movement, says nothing organized by President Paul Biya's government will be allowed to take place in southern Cameroon, including this Sunday's National Youth Day celebrations and the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations tournament.
Issa Chiroma isn't sure himself what he is saying because himself is not sure whether his president is alive or dead. And let me tell you, we in the interim government of the Federal Republic of Ambazonia, we have long decided since October 1st when we declared the restoration of our nation, Ambazonia, that nothing organized in Yaoundé can be implemented in our territory, the Southern Cameroon or Ambazonia. And so they have the right to announce an election. Now, we're going to see where those elections are going to take place in the Southern Cameroons. No celebration of any national day organized by the Republic of Cameroon is taking place in Ambazonia. For example, February 11, which happened to fall on this Sunday. No national week celebrations organized by the Republic of Cameroon is taking place in Ambazonia. And of course, no African Cup of Nations also will be taking place in our territory. That I can assure you.
But how do you intend to stop these events from taking place in your territory?
Well, it takes people to get these events to take place, correct? We basically need to say to our people, these are foreign events being organized in our territory, and we're not going to be party to it, and our people will respond to it accordingly. That's all.
Let me get your reaction to the European Union calling on the government to ensure that in dealing with what I would call uprising in the English-speaking region, to ensure that lives are protected and also to initiate dialogue.
Well, I consider the European Union and most of these international organizations to be hypocrites. What does it take for the European Union to say to the government of Cameroon, it is your place to initiate inclusive dialogue? So I am amazed that we keep hearing put on inclusive dialogue to resolve the problem, but they have the power, the leverage, the ability to have Cameroon call for inclusive dialogue. They haven't done it. When people are killed on the ground by the Cameroon government, the same European Union, the UN, the Commonwealth, and so on, they keep on saying, no killing on both sides. Who is killing who on the ground? We are not armed. We are merely defending ourselves against the aggression of a well-trained army. And they are telling people to stop killing. That's a lot of hypocrisy here. The European Union, if they think we can take them seriously, should say to Mr. Bia, it is your place, not the dissidents, not the Amazonians, to call for dialogue. It is the place of Paul Bia, and the European Union has the power to force them to do so.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Southern Cameroon. You're speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Friday, February 9th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 16 minutes past the hour. The Central Bank of South Sudan says it will inject more U.S. dollars into the economy in a bid to prevent further devaluation of the South Sudanese pound. A Bank of South Sudan official says the move is aimed at curbing the country's sky-high inflation rates. But an analyst says injecting more foreign currency into the economy won't heal the country's economic crisis. Wike Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Dier Tongor, the first deputy governor of the Bank of South Sudan, says the decision to inject more U.S. dollars into the economy follows a meeting between the finance ministry, central bank officials, and President Salva Kiir. Ngor says the most recent drop in value of the South Sudanese pound against the U.S. dollar has led to a sharp increase in prices of basic goods and services this past week.
We'll provide more dollars into the market. We will also want to support the key priority sectors, including the companies that are bringing fuel to the country and also the companies that are bringing essential commodities to the countries.
The rate of exchange for the U.S. dollar jumped to 250 South Sudanese pounds this week on the black market. Ngor says to ensure the pound does not drop in value again against the dollar, the Bank of South Sudan will regulate its supplies into the market. He says one of the reasons the exchange rate shot up again is because civil servants were paid in December.
We have also talked to banks to make sure that certain policies that we have issued before are upheld and are respected. In particular, we have issued banks with a circular that regulate the large cash transactions. When people come with large cash, banks need to make sure that the sources of these funds are legitimate sources.
Ngor admits the government has reduced hard currency due to its limited resources in the marketplace and the low price of oil.
At the moment, we are depending on one commodity. We are depending on oil. And as we all know, production of the oil has reduced. The international oil prices have also significantly been very low in the last few months. But thank God now these prices is improving. So as long as there is improving in the oil prices, we will have more dollars because, as I have mentioned, the dollars that we get, because the dollar is not our currency, and therefore we get dollar when we produce more. So it depends on production.
Ngor says the central bank has warned commercial banks across the country not to finance foreign exchange trading. But Ahmed Morjan, an economics lecturer at the University of Juba, says foreign finance exchange trading is a key part of banking business that financial institutions cannot do without. Morjan says neither injecting more dollars into the economy nor regulating supplies will end the country's current economic crisis.
The measures which is being put by the central bank at the moment is a right measure, but at the wrong time at the moment. The economy has reached a situation where most of these measures will not be effective. As we know, the exchange rate crisis started because of deficiency of foreign exchange in the country due to the problems that you already know, low production of oil, the price reduction in the national market of oil, and again, the war situation in the country.
Morjan says South Sudan imports almost everything and it needs a lot of hard currency to import goods and services. He says the current price hike is a result of high demand for hard currency against a supply which is very limited. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Hundreds of protesters marched in Kenya's capital on Thursday to demand greater diversity in President Uhuru Kenyatta's cabinet picks. Activists are calling on parliament to reject the nominees and Kenyatta to nominate more women, youth, and members of marginalized groups. Rael Ombuo reports for VOA from Nairobi.
The protesters carried signs that read, "Recall the list," as they marched to parliament in Nairobi. They are demanding that the recently re-elected President Uhuru Kenyatta revise his list of cabinet nominees to make it more inclusive. 6 of the 21 nominees on the current list are women. No youth, defined as people between ages 18 and 35, were nominated. Activists say only one person with a disability has been nominated. Sabeti Mboga, a disabled mother of three, joined the march. I am here to protest because the government does not recognize us. We also want to be involved in the process of governance like anybody else. The protesters say Kenyatta is seeking to reward ruling party loyalists. Mercy Jelimo is a leadership and governance officer at the Center for Rights Education and Awareness.
Today we are going to Parliament. This is our form of presentation of our memorandum to the Committee on Appointments. As they vet the cabinet nominees, we are there to express our dissatisfaction.
In early January, Kenyatta came under fire from gender activists for announcing a partial list of nominees that included no women. He released a full list on January 26th. The president has not responded to criticism of his cabinet picks. The issue is re-emerging amid a tense political climate. Kenyatta's government is drawing criticism for its arrest of three people who took part in the mock presidential inauguration of opposition leader Raila Odinga on January 30th and for its temporary shutdown of three TV stations that tried to cover the event. The Interior Minister said the government acted to prevent violence. Rights groups say authorities are trampling on the constitution and defying court orders. Jimmy Eddy, a member of Team Courage, a local activist group, marched Thursday with other demonstrators.
We have seen the media being under siege of lately. We have also seen arrest of various people, including deportation. How do you deport your child from your house?
Odinga rejected the results of the October presidential runoff election, which he boycotted, and has called for a fresh vote in August. One of the three opposition figures arrested over the swearing-in ceremony arrived in Canada Thursday after being deported, according to local media. Miguna Miguna is a leader of Odinga's National Resistance Movement. In a statement, the Interior Ministry said Miguna's Kenyan citizenship has been revoked. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
The East African community is embarking on a transportation master plan which involves reviving the defunct airways of the community and setting up a regional vehicle assembly plant. Julius Maganda Wandera, the chairman of the East African Community Council of Ministers, who is also Uganda's state minister for East African Affairs, says officials will discuss the matter during the extraordinary summit later this month. Mugumi Davis Rakarinj reports from Uganda's capital, Kampala.
The East African Airways Corporation, also known as the East African Airways, was an airline jointly run by Kenya, Tanzania and Uganda that was set up in the 1940s. While addressing journalists in Kampala this Thursday, Maganda Wandela says improving infrastructure is on top agenda when the leaders of East African community meet in Kampala on 23rd this month.
Remember, we had the East African Railways and Harbours, which is already coming back under the SGR. It's going to have an interlinked a line which will connect the whole region. We have the East African Airways, which also collapsed, and each partner state decided to develop its own airlines.
The corporation was dissolved in 1977 amid deteriorated relations among the three countries. But Maganda Wandela says the now five countries won't let that happen again.
You should begin telling people that the anticipation for the region is to see that we have a plane which is having a flag for East African community.
Before its collapse, the airline provided jobs for thousands of East Africans, directly or indirectly. And Maganda Wandela says they also want each East African country to equally have its own airline in addition to that of the regional bloc.
The partner states are encouraging each partner to develop an airline system, and then they are going to have a network. They are going also to develop a hub within the region, which is now going to do all the connectivity within the region.
So far, Kenya, Tanzania and Rwanda already have their own airlines. Besides transport network, member states also want to work together towards improving the health infrastructure. The East African community is composed of 6 countries, Uganda, Kenya and Tanzania, as well as Burundi, Rwanda and South Sudan. Each state is connected to the world by a network of international airports, most of which are located in or adjacent the region's major cities. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Our time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the 2018 Winter Olympic Games, which begins formally today in Pyeongchang in South Korea. Nigeria's women's bobsled team, Seun Adigun, Ngozi Ogunmere, Akoma Omoga, and Simidile Adeagbo, are making history as their participation at the 2018 Winter Olympics will be the country's first Winter Games appearance. The girls are optimistic about their chances in the competition. And now to cricket news. The United Arab Emirates made the perfect start to their bid to reach the Cricket World Cup qualifier as they thrashed Kenya and beat the weather in Windhoek, Namibia, on Thursday. The opening match of the World Cricket League Division 2 pitted the top 2 ranked sides in the competition against each other. Having amassed 309-8 in a punishing display with the bat, they fired out the Kenyans for 91 with a ball to win by 218 runs. And now to football. Record 8-time title holders Al Ahly of Egypt are among 10 former winners who qualify for the 2018 CAF Champions League, which begins this weekend with preliminary round first legs. Defending champion Wydad Casablanca of Morocco and 5-time winners TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo are other powerful outfits in the 59-club field. After a bye, Wydad launched their title defense against Todd Malien of Mali or newcomers Williamsville of the Ivory Coast, neither of whom look likely giant killers. There are also 5 teams who have won other CAF competitions, making it one of the strongest lineups in the 54-year history of the leading African club competition. Staying with football news, Nigeria's new kits for the 2018 World Cup in Russia have been revealed as the Super Eagles gear up for this summer's tournament in Russia. The Nigerian Football Federation launched the country's kit for the championship in London on Wednesday. The jersey is designed by Nike, which was worn by the first Nigerian team to qualify for the World Cup, with eagle wing-inspired black and white sleeve and green torso, while the away kit boasts of the full green stripe in a classic fashion. Another World Cup-bound side, Egypt, has its national team's director, Iheb Leheta, confirming that Egypt is in talks with several football associations to hold further pre-World Cup friendlies. Leheta confirmed that Egypt is negotiating with several Arab, European and South American teams to set up international friendlies and foreign training camps ahead of the 2018 World Cup in Russia in June. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that is it for this Friday, February 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll speak with Bobby Wine, the outspoken Ugandan member of parliament, is a businessman, activist, humanitarian, and musician. His lyrics often advocate for Uganda's struggling and poor. Bobby Wine joins host Shaka Sali to discuss his role as an artist in African politics.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.